Today I'm presenting work that I'm doing in collaboration with Sean Brady and Sam Drogi at the Smithsonian and USGS respectively. And my talk today is on work that is very much still in progress, so some preliminary data. And it is called Making Sense of the Diverse Kleptoparasitic Bee Genus Nomada Using DNA to Complement Morphology. First, I'm going to give just a very brief introduction to Nomada because they are not social. In fact, they're kleptoparasitic, so they may not be on some people's radar screens. And then mostly I'm going to be talking about some phylogenetic work that I'm doing in the genus. And if there's time, I'll also talk a little bit about some of the taxonomic work I'm doing. Okay, so Nomada are kleptoparasitic. What this means is that they parasitize other species of bees, and their hosts are solitary bees, and they're ground nesting bees. What they do is they sneak into the nest of a host bee, and they deposit their egg and leave, leaving that host bee species to finish taking care of that bee. And because they're solitary bees, they're not being, you know, continually provisioned by these host bees. Instead, the host female goes off, collects a bunch of pollen, leaves a pollen mass for the young in the nest, seals it off, and doesn't have any more interaction with her young. And they're analogous to cowbirds or cuckoo birds in the old world in that they are abandoning their eggs in the nest of another species. Because they're parasitic, they're not collecting pollen to bring back to leave for their young, they tend to have a very wasp-like appearance. They don't need lots of hairs for trapping pollen. So this is a Nomada, and you can see the hind legs are quite bare. Here's another image of a Nomada. They're kind of clown-like in appearance. They have a background integumental coloring of black or red, and then they've got these maculations all over their body, typically yellow or white. Here's another view. Okay, just to talk a little bit about kleptoparasitic diversity in bees as a whole, we know of kleptoparasites in four different families. Most of that diversity, almost three-fourths of that diversity, is found in the Apidae, and this is where the family to which Nomada belongs. So here I've mapped on the species of Nomada. We have 795 described species, probably quite a bit more once all of that diversity is actually explored. Over a fourth of the diversity in bees as a whole found in Nomada. Okay, moving on to the phylogenetic work. The first thing I want to mention is that there is one other phylogenetic study of this genus. It was published by Byron Alexander in 1994. It was an analysis using morphology and parsimony. And it was a very, very careful study. Byron actually examined probably all of the described species and some that were undescribed, doing dissections of all the males, a really excellent, careful study. He then, for his matrix, used exemplar coding. He went through and placed all of these taxa into 20 terminal taxa that he had in mind going into the analysis. He ended up only recognizing 17 species groups when he was all done. Okay, our work is a DNA study. We currently have 116 species, and we have 13 of those 17 species groups that Byron Alexander ended up with as a result of his study. The four that we're missing are listed down here. Three of them are found in North America, but they're very rarely collected within this group. The first group here, only four species. Two of them are only known from holotypes. Rodecki, also only known from a holotype. And then these two that are starred, the Belfragii and Odontophora, are ones that we actually have specimens of, but we're still working on them. They won't actually be in this tree that I'm presenting. Three gene regions, mitochondrial, ribosomal, and nuclear, for about 1,800 base pairs. The tree I'm presenting is a Bayesian tree, and I'm mapping on their bootstrap support with likelihood and parsimony. I'd be happy to talk about this further if anyone has any questions. Okay, so here's our tree. And these boxes of color along here roughly correlate to the species groups that Byron Alexander proposed as a result of his study. I've only mapped the support at sort of the level of species groups and then kind of deeper in the tree. And then I'll show again, here are the species groups names actually listed on the tree. And you'll notice right away this Rufocornis species group is coming out in five different spots on the tree. This is not too surprising. This was his sort of default trash can group. If he couldn't really place a species into one of these other species groups, it kind of went into this Rufocornis group. We have about 800 species in that species group alone. But for the most part, we are recovering his species groups. The DNA supports his hypotheses based on morphology. Having said that, however, a lot of the sister group relationships between the species groups are not the same between the two studies. And in fade, this is the only clade that is in common between the two trees. It's this, the groups are called Basalis and Superba, and I'll be talking about them a little bit further. So now I'm going to, there are a lot of stories I could tell about this tree. I'm just going to zoom in on a couple of these clades, in particular dealing with these Rufocornis species that are falling out in different places in the tree. Okay, so the first clade that I'm going to zero in on comprises this one group of Rufocornis, sister to some old world species in Basalis, and then one New World Basalis with some New World Superba, and then Superba. The first thing I want to talk about is the fact that the taxa that are in Rufocornis are ones that a gentleman by the name of Max Schwartz pointed out to me. I had the opportunity to visit with Max Schwartz. He is the expert on Nomada currently that's still alive. And I had the opportunity to visit with him last summer and get a sense of his idea of the classification for Nomada. And he specifically pointed out these taxa and said, you know, I'm really kind of disappointed that Byron Alexander felt these belonged in the trash can group. I really feel they belong to this Basalis species group. So I hope he'll feel vindicated by the results of this study. They are coming sister. And then something interesting that I've been finding is this sort of dichotomy between old world taxa and new world taxa with females sharing some synapomorphies, in this case of the legs, the face, the pygidial plate, and then the old world representatives having additional synapomorphies, in this case of male genitalia. So if we zoom in on another group, here we have some old world representatives, bifasciata, which is currently, as it bifasciata is currently known, it's strictly an old world group. And then some taxa that were put in Rufocornis from the new world, coming sister to them. And what we have is shared synapomorphies of all the females, again, of lay characters, and then the old world representatives of bifasciata, the males having unusual synapomorphies in different areas of the body, not the genitalia, but lay characters. And then finally, this last big group of Rufocornis, I only want to kind of talk about this a little bit because there's been an ongoing debate about this one group that we're calling the bidentates. And what they are is just very sort of nondescript Rufocornis taxa, but they they happen to have a subapical tooth on the mandible. If you didn't look at the mandible, you would have no way of knowing if it was a species that belongs in here or out here. So we have lots of names flying around that if you didn't look at the mandible, you would have no idea if it belonged to a taxa out here or in here. And people had been debating, you know, how strong is this mandibular tooth? Does it matter? And we are finding some support. It's not great, truly strong support that I would necessarily hang my hand on right now, but we are finding some support that these are forming a clade. Okay, so stepping back and looking at Nomada as a whole, what we're finding is that with sort of at a species group level, Nomada is primarily holarctic, and as a matter of fact, the group that we're resolving as basal is found in North America only, but primarily a holarctic group with three sort of exceptions that are nested within the tree. This orange group here found in South Africa, this darker purple group here found in South America and the West Indies, it's the only Nomada found there. And then this light green here going into Southeast Asia, Philippines, Solomon Islands, into Australia as far as Queensland. And then if we look at the hosts, a similar story, predominantly going to the Andrenid genus Andrena. And then if you look at these areas of interesting geographic regions, this one from South Africa, not going to Andrena, it's going to Melita, we think. And then in South Africa, South America, an area where Andrena is not present, it's going to another apid genus, Eximolopsis. And then this other area here, where again Andrena is not present, going to a halictid, Lasioglossum. So looking at it one more way, we have this holarctic distribution primarily on Andrena. There were two explicit hypotheses about how Nomada might have evolved and relate that to geography. In 1974, Michener proposed that the basal group within Nomada should be Vegana, that one that's found in South America, based on the fact that it's going to another apid group. And he thought, well, you would expect that first they would parasitize something that's more closely related to themselves. So that was the basis of that argument. He didn't have a phylogeny to base this on. And then Byron Alexander actually resolved this South African group as basal in his phylogeny. And so he based his stories on how Nomada evolved on that. And then we're ending up with this North American group as basal with an Andrenid host. And then both Byron Alexander's analysis and ours are agreeing in this idea that we have these other clades nested within Nomada that are moving into novel geographic regions after switching hosts. And then our analysis differs in that it's also considering the South African group as another movement into a novel area from switching hosts. So just a quick summary. Many of the species groups that were proposed by Byron Alexander are also being supported by DNA data. Our DNA data break the Rufocornis species group into five clades, with some of these relationships to other species groups supported by morphology. And the DNA data support further novel relationships between species groups, the Nearctic Vincta group, sister to the remaining Nomada, and all species groups with southern hemisphere distributions well nested within the tree. Okay, just a little bit on the taxonomy of Nomada in eastern North America. This was work that really began because Sam Droege, who is interested in putting online keys to all the species found in Eastern North America in his Discover Life Guides has been looking at Nomada for several years now and really kind of getting frustrated and not being able to make good sense of them just with the morphology. So our main goals were to delimit species and to associate genders. There are 120 species in the Rufocornis group, or about 15% of all Nomada, that are only known from females. And then in Eastern North America, we have, conveniently enough, about 20 species only known from males, and about 20 only known from females. We currently have about 1,100 specimens included in our tree. This includes some donated material and sequences from Corey Sheffield. Be hard to show a tree with 1,100 terminal taxa. So what I've done, this is just one page of a 14-page printout of our barcoding tree. And what we have is the tail end of one cluster and the beginning of another cluster here. This is within that bidentate group that I was talking about previously. This lower cluster here was initially identified with different names, and I counted them up. We have 18 different names in this lower cluster here. And part of the confusion has been there really aren't great structural characters for us to look at in this particular subgrouping of Nomada. So people have kind of fallen back on looking at color patterns, and it turns out color patterns are really bad for identifying Nomada, at least in this particular group. We also have a problem of, if you have a male, you're going to turn to the list of, okay, what are the male names that we have to choose from, and also with the female. So we're getting some of that in there. And as I mentioned, a lot of these bidentates look exactly like some of these non-bidentates that are closely related. So if you didn't bother to look at the mandible, you might have put a name on from one of these non-bidentates that looks pretty much the same. So we're very hopeful about it. We're especially getting some good results with associating genders. But this is also a work in progress. Thanks very much.
Host data, can you talk about what percentage maybe of species, I'm also surprised at how many species there are, how many species for which you have hosts, and how do you collect, or how are those data typically collected?
This was some background work that Byron Alexander did, just combing the literature, and he went through and evaluated, okay, how strong is this? Is it just they were collected at the same flowers, or was it actually reared from the nest? And we don't have tons of great data where it was actually reared from the, and I have down here, we only have this known for 92 species. Not a great representation. Yeah.
What effect did outward selection have on your tree?
Tremendous. And that's part of our ongoing work. We're still working on getting some nomadines in there as outgroups. Yeah, so right now we just have it with the honeybee. I don't know what's going to happen when we add better outgroups, but could very well change. And also we don't have, you know, tremendous support further down in our tree. Exactly. Yeah, we're working on that. We are getting better outgroups.
Any thoughts on combining the Alexander morphology data with your molecular sequence data?
Yes. I was fortunate enough in my visits with Max Schwartz, who worked very closely with Byron Alexander in his study. He actually retained photocopies of all of Byron Alexander's notes, beautiful drawings of all the genitalia that he dissected, all the different species. And he and Max Schwartz published a catalog of all the species, and they say for every species which species group it belongs to. So between those two, I should be able to go back and piece together what the coding should be for a particular terminal taxa that I've included with DNA. Yes, that is on the horizon. Mm-hmm. Thanks very much.
And thank you again for all this.